You're listening to Cannabis Business Confidential by Hybrid Marketing Co. Our podcast explores every corner of the cannabis industry with expert guests for a behind-the-scenes look at this rapidly evolving space. From business insights to cultural and community trends, we'll ensure you stay informed and ahead of the curve.
Welcome to another edition of Hybrid Office Hours. I'm Tyler Jacobson, Director of Marketing here at Hybrid, with Matt Gillespie, VP of Creative, and Aaron Rosenbluth, our Director of Content. And today, it's a bonus episode of Hybrid Office Hours, where yes, you get two of them this month. And this one is all about the 10 marketing blind spots of cannabis companies. And so this spans dispensaries to B2B brands. It's just kind of, it's going to pull, you know, this is just what we've seen over the many years that we've been marketing in the cannabis industry. It is also the title of a contributed piece that I gave to MG Magazine, and it's published right now. You can see it on the web, and then it should be in the edition that is going to be distributed at MG BizCon. So let's jump into it. The first blind spot is your audience isn't everyone. So how often have we heard, oh, we've got something for everybody, especially with dispensaries. Oh, we've got something for everybody. Coca-Cola is not for everyone. Nike is not for everyone. When you are trying to reach a broad audience, your message is going to be diluted. It's not going to be meaningful to the audience because it has to address so many different people. So you want to be deep rather than wide. So go for those niche audiences. What do I always say? The riches are in the niches.
Riches are in the niches. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's true.
I've also heard you say, you know, when you're trying to be for everyone, you're really for no one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I like that one better. Yes. We can use both of them. We can use all of them.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Let me, I agree. I mean, obviously I agree with you, but really quickly, let me fire off a question that we would get from a client around that. But we want to talk to everyone, but everyone wants our product. Everyone can consume.
That's absolutely true. Everyone can consume, but not everybody is going to consume. And the more you can integrate into a lifestyle, the better off you're going to be. And it's going to be cheaper also. That's the other thing. It really conserves your marketing budget because you are going after a very specific group of people. That doesn't mean other people won't come to your dispensary, because they will, mm-hmm. right? But we need to be a dispensary or a product for the people most likely to say yes. And then we really need to focus on them. Look for, yeah.
Something you just said. Oh, sorry, Matt.
No, go ahead.
Really quickly, what you said, the person most likely to say yes, that reminds me of something else, because we've had this conversation with many clients before, and sometimes they do want to niche into something, but what they want to niche into isn't what you just described, which is the person most likely to say yes. I'm thinking the yoga moms, the standard.
I was going to compel you to say that if you didn't offer it up, and clearly you did. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Matt?
Sorry, Matt.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, I think that this is a concept that's easier for a brand to lean into than a retailer, than a dispensary. You know, a dispensary's mentality is we have a vast array of products. We truly do have products for everyone. And while that's okay to be true, I think as you're building a brand, aligning to a lifestyle, having a vibe that connects to a specific, more niche down audience is the way to go. You can still offer a vast array of products, truly something for everyone, but you know, your core values, your purpose, align it to an audience.
You know, Matt, as you're saying that, I'm thinking the product is what you sell. And yes, you are selling something for everyone, but that is not who you are. And right. Doesn't necessarily need to be who you need to talk to.
Yep.
So
for sure.
And we're going to have other blind spots here as we go down the list that also feed into that idea that not everyone is your audience. So we're going to see more of that in this top 10. All right. The next one is cannabis content marketing, education educational content is not going to get you where you want to be. Everybody wants to do educational content. Aaron, take it away.
Oh man, let's go. Yeah. So, you know, and I don't fault, firstly, I want to start this with this. I don't fault anyone for thinking or wanting to educate the general cannabis consuming public or everyone who could be. I don't fault anyone for that desire. But I will say that we had that desire. That's how I entered into this space. I remember starting to write blogs, 2016, 2017. It was actually going back to the yoga moms. That's what we were speaking to. We were trying to swap out your glass of wine, swap the Chardonnay for the weed. And then education, teach people about terpenes, the endocannabinoid system, the entourage effect, minor cannabinoids, like all of it, you name it, homeostasis, the whole bit. And what we have determined after years of writing that, I mean, we did give it a solid try and we've grown and learned, et cetera. Nobody cares. They don't care. The average consumer does not care. And it's so complicated, and we've gotten very good at simplifying it, but yet it's still complicated. And I think that most people aren't really looking for that kind of depth in their experience. They just want to sleep, have fun, not feel anxious.
I'm gonna hit you with two things here. Oh, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, if you think back 8 years ago when that was a big part of our content strategy, it served a purpose then. I think that, you know, there weren't as many legal markets as there are today. There were less resources for that education. And so we did see a ton of success and you know, a lot of web traffic coming in through that educational content. I think the unfortunate side of it, though, is, and I'm sure Tyler is going to hit on this, like, you're bringing those people into your site, but they're not there to come shop at your business. Mm-hmm. They're there for that information. That's all they're ready for at that point. They're not going to read the blog and say, I'm ready to finally buy this purchase that I've been stewing about for a while. That's not the journey.
Yeah, we have examples of that with data. Sorry, Tyler.
No, go ahead.
I mean, you know this because you see the data. Like, we have examples of very high performing pieces of content like that. I'm thinking specifically of some content around vapes that was ranking for one of our clients, still does well, for has been for years, that does not result into any ROI for them at all. You know, like, hasn't done anything.
So that's exactly right. So let's just say that when people are looking for education on the web, it is an informational search. It's not a transactional search. Somebody is not going to learn about, say, the entourage effect and then say, thanks, dispensary, I'm going to come in and buy a product from you. Those are two different kinds of searches. They're also global searches, if not global. But And so what you're seeing win in those spaces is your High Times, your scientific journals. When you talk about B2B, though, I think we can put a little asterisk there because that is something that you can point prospects back to. People who are interested in buying your product, you can say, we have a whole page about this. So there can be use for it. And I would say even on the dispensary side, you could potentially use it in email copy. But I would say, you know, instead of relying on search to bring people to your site. So you could use an email copy, but look at your stats and see if anybody actually cares about this. See if anybody's clicking through on that. And that can give you an idea. But if you are relying on educational content to equal a transaction, that is a failed strategy. It's not going to work. Everybody wants to do it.
Everyone wants. We hear it all the time. That's why I'm kind of like have this sort of visceral reaction to it. I want to clarify a little bit too. I don't want to say that education isn't important, but for all of everything that we just said applies. I think where education can and really should happen and happen over time as the customer returns is at the point of purchase. Just, you know, speak to the bud tender and ask them what they for that that hit of a little bit of education that you can kind of build upon as you become a more experienced consumer. But and that's it. We can stop there. I could go for way too long. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it's probably, I'm sure somebody's watching or listening to this and telling me that I'm wrong, but I'm right.
Well, they are. Yeah. Yeah.
So the next one, clarify your unique value proposition. Every purchase comes down to this idea of value. And when I say value, I'm not saying cheap. I'm saying value. So if you people will spend money if they need that thing, if they think it's worth the cost. And if you look exactly like your competitors, it makes it really hard for them to pick you. So you have to understand why you're different from your competitors to the marketplace, and you need to communicate that. You guys have any thoughts on that one?
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that one.
I know. I'm like, yes, I just agree. How many times do you think we've encountered someone who has no idea what their why is, or their why is like generic or shallow? Mm-hmm.
But you could share a why with a competitor, and that excludes that unique. But I think that it is an important step to defining that unique value, because you can say, we started this dispensary for XYZ, and it might be this area wasn't being served, or you packaging. Sure. This packaging is faster and it's cleaner than the other packaging machines. So you can find those unique values, and that's what you need to communicate, and that makes it easier to buy from you in the marketplace. You can get really complicated during the sales conversation. Absolutely. You can go through a list of ways that you're better than your competitor, but you need to stand for a thing in the marketplace that nobody else stands for.
I think you also need to spend some time ensuring that the value is something that the consumers truly want. Like, are they going to see it as valuable? You mentioned the packaging thing, Tyler. I know packaging is on the list as well.
That's next one.
Next one.
Should I just jump into it?
We've seen brands shift to, environmentally sound and eco-friendly flower packaging, and it bombed. you have people expecting a premium flower product, and then you try to go out there with the messaging that you've reduced packaging and now you're in these bags that are more environmentally friendly, less plastics, but the product is just getting crushed and destroyed. And, you know, I've seen that not work well.
Well, and you also, if I'm not mistaken, you're saying the consumer doesn't care. And I think that that's something you need to consider when you're talking about your unique value and why it's so important to look at the market. Because if they aren't going to just adopt something because you want them to adopt it, they have to have a need first. They have to want that unique value. It has to be valuable to them. So
you're hitting on something, Matt. You said it. You expanded on it. It's something that's so funny and frustrating that we've seen all over the place. We've even seen it in other industries like that we work with outside of this. It's the idea of people who go sit there one day and think, oh, I have a great idea. Yeah, I have a great idea. I'm just going to go make this thing or this idea, execute on this thing without ever talking to anyone or looking outside of myself to figure out if anyone actually wants this thing. Or at least
Somebody's already doing it.
Or if somebody's already doing it. Yes.
Because that's the other thing. You think this idea is so great and so original, and I've experienced it, honestly. You don't want to go out there and find out that there's already three people doing it and your dream just goes away like that. But you need to do it, or you're going to spend a lot of money and a lot of energy rebuilding the wheel.
That gets really important.
It looks worse than somebody else's wheel.
It's a shitty wheel. Pardon my friend. It's a crappier wheel.
We can say shitty on this.
It's a shittier wheel.
On LinkedIn. LinkedIn allows it.
So liberating. Thank you, LinkedIn. But I was going to say that I think we see this a lot more. I'm thinking more of like kind of the ancillary product equipment manufacturing and like even sort of software solution side, where it's almost like that engineering mentality. Like, oh, I have this brilliant idea for this thing that it's for the industry. And then I'm just going to go out and make it and not consider if anyone actually wants it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of tools in the marketing toolbox to find out if that is actually the truth or not. And they should be exercised, you know, minimum viable products, testing, research, do those things. They're so important. They're going to save you a lot of time and a lot of heartache.
And a lot of money.
You don't want to throw yourself into, you don't want to throw everything you have into something emotionally, you know, monetarily, and then have it flop.
So, yeah. I got an idea. Great idea for canned water. Is anyone else not?
I like that. Okay. Cannabis packaging and design influences buyer trust. Okay. Packaging is part of your marketing. And you need look no further than a company like Wild, who is one of the top brands out there. And the reason people pick them up even in the first place, only to find out that their product is really great, but the reason people pick them up is because their box looks so unique and so inviting. It's this pentagon-shaped box, I believe.
Yeah, it's, you know, geometric, it's got dimension, it's got angles, it's just is so unique in the in the edibles packaging world. You know, I think 1906 was another brand that came to mind too, thinking about really, really good quality and unique cannabis product packaging. I, you know, as a designer, I often choose products based on the design, based on the packaging, something I've never tried before. My first go-to is, you know, how's the branding? What's the label design? What does the packaging look like? That's how I make my decisions. And, you know, maybe that's somewhat unique because I am a designer, but I also think that, you know, I think a lot of people make a decision based on, you know, nobody's choosing product that has poor packaging or bad design. You know, if the packaging and the design is so poor, what does that say about what's inside?
That's the whole thing. Yeah.
We feast with our eyes. We make decisions with our eyes. Our eyes have all these shortcuts that execute in our brain to tell us whether we want to try something or not. And so packaging for some businesses is very much a secondary thought. But that might be the only interaction that your brand ever has with a consumer. Sure. And so you have to put effort into it.
If you don't put effort into it, there are so many variables that will bury your product within an assortment in a dispensary that you have no control over. The one thing that you do have control over is your packaging. So it might not be in the right place next to the right thing. I mean, there are so many things. Like you're not going to be able to physically put your own product within a store and suggest it to the customer, you know, and oftentimes it just makes them floundering a little bit, but it's frustrating when people don't see that is one of the most critical things that they can possibly invest in.
And really quick, I want to scale it up to the dispensary level. Packaging matters for the dispensary level. How are you packaging up your product? Is your dispensary inviting? Is it a wonderful experience for people coming in? Is it overwhelmingly beautiful? Is it, you know, does it look like a liquor store with dirty floors?
Yeah, or I mean, is it just so efficient? Is your process just so efficient that even if it does look like a dirty liquor store, that the customer doesn't care because you're just in and out so easy? Because it can go either way, you know.
And then again, you can even go to manufacturers of industrial equipment that help the growers get their product to market. That has packaging with it. it's not going to be the same. It's not a cardboard box on the outside of it, but the way that you are selling yourself. Remember, people feast with their eyes. They make decisions with their eyes. And the stat that I absolutely love to throw out there is that visuals are processed in your brain 60,000 times faster than the written word. Mm-hmm. It's critical that your packaging works, and it shouldn't be a secondary thought. Matt, I interrupted you.
No, you're good. So you brought up Wild. I remember hearing rumblings, it's been several years now, that Wild was going to be eliminating their unique dimensional geometric packaging.
Oh, yeah.
For something more environmentally friendly, reduced packaging. Here in Colorado, I don't think that was ever rolled out. And I'm wondering if it was rolled out anywhere. I'm still seeing the packaging that I've always seen.
I mean, honestly, that is not maybe, I mean, it should be their trademark, but it is their visual trademark. Yeah. That's how people know it's Wild.
Right.
Actually, can I share an anecdote to that point about this very quickly? We were recently, I think I've told you guys this before, but we were at a friend's like party at their house over the summer this year, last sometime. And it's funny, like, you know, I show up at the party and everyone's asking what everyone does. And I become the weed guy at like every party, which is like, okay, great. I'm the weed guy. So then, you know, it's always interesting because it is a fascinating topic of conversation. And this was a party made up of people that I wouldn't normally be around. So these are like wealthy white people in their mid to late 60s that I'm surrounded by at this thing. I've become the weed guy. Somebody walks up to me and starts describing, asking me questions about, I mean, that they were very curious. Like everyone is curious. But a woman's talking to me and she's telling me about a brand she loves. These edibles she found that she just loves. She loved them so much. And she cannot remember the name to save her life. But she starts to describe the packaging. And whose packaging do you think she's describing?
Wild.
Yeah. She couldn't tell you the name. Had no idea. No connection to the brand. Like nothing. I mean, she wasn't. It was just that she loved the product. But it's this thing that she remembers.
And I have a friend who came to town and bought them for the exact same reason. She was like, this was beautiful packaging. I had to pick it up.
So Wild, if you're listening, don't change your packaging.
Don't do it. And there could be a future. Let's just say that what we're saying right now catches everybody's attention. And then everybody goes unique with your packaging. You're going to have a different problem then. We can talk about it at that point. But right now, there's not enough brands really leveraging that idea. And I'm going to repeat it because it's so important. That might be the only communication your brand ever has with a consumer. Mm-hmm. Put effort into it.
We'd be remiss not to acknowledge one thing about this, which is that we do know that sometimes state compliance limits the creativity that you have available to you in packaging. I remember talking, Old Pal's not a client, but I was talking to Rusty several years ago, and I remember him talking about the pain of having to dilute their brand. I think it was in Florida that requires everything to be, you know, black and white. So just, just to acknowledge that, like, yes, we know that there are barriers to this sometimes. So you just have to work around it. So,
anyway. Correct. And the thing to acknowledge there too, is that your competitors also have those barriers.
Same barriers.
So yeah, 100%. Okay. We talked about this on a previous episode, so I don't know how deep we need to go into it, but become a lifestyle brand instead of a category commodity.
Yes.
This goes back to the niching down. Not everybody is your audience. Seth Godin says, people like us do things like this. It's a tribalism play. Every bit of marketing is a tribalism play, if you're going to be honest. So people like us do things like this. That's how we identify ourselves. Because we adopt things. I'm cool because I got a jean jacket.
Right? I mean, before the jean jacket.
Yeah.
But yeah. This is my flag, I guess.
That's cool because I used to wear a white belt and a jean jacket. Anyway, but yeah, those were the signifiers. I think about, well, Matt, what do you, I'm gonna pause.
Oh, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the idea of a lifestyle brand and a love brand and, I think it, you know, we don't need to hit it too heavy, but will always want to drive the idea of a lifestyle brand, because it, again, it goes back to aligning with a specific audience, being for somebody or some group of people that share similar interests and values.
Yeah, it makes me think. We talked about this in a lot. We've talked about this on like every one of these. But cookies is like the first one that comes to mind because they've done it so well. Right. I mean, fully, they absolutely have. They know that their audience, you know, and it's working. You could see it.
Absolutely.
Get your own Spuds McKenzie. How dated is that reference? Okay, so
I like it.
The next blind spot is PR. PR is a visibility engine, and it's critical to being found in search and in traditional search and in AI-driven search. But the other thing is it gets the industry talking about you. It gets the sources of information that your consumers rely on, the trusted sources, talking about you. That is so much more powerful than you going out there and saying you're great. Having somebody else say you're great, it's really important. And like I said, to win in the search at this point, it's not optional, because Google wants to know that there's chatter out there on the internet from reliable sources about your brand. It's not even backlinks at this point. That's antiquated thinking. It's not backlinks. It's mentions of your brand. Start off with PR in your marketing plan.
Mm-hmm.
Make budget for it. It is going to be an important piece of this. And also, don't make moves before you talk to a PR person, because you might have something that's extremely newsworthy, but you decided to put it out there in the world before you talked to PR. And they're like, well, that moment is gone. I don't know what we're going to talk about now.
Yeah, you screwed the lead. Yeah. I mean, I wish that it's so critical. It's funny. I don't know. I would even think this, but like, I don't know if anyone would view it from us to say like, it is so supportive of the work that we're doing that I view it as almost one of the most critical components of a full marketing mix. And that might sound like a cop out in a way, because it's like, well, can't your marketing do it alone? It's like, no, we need that.
Well, never,
but it's so. It is so helpful in a very significant way that I don't know why anyone would ignore it.
I think we often hear people wanting to choose between PR or marketing. And like, I can only do one or the other. And it's like, well, you know, if you're launching something, maybe starting with PR is the most effective, because, you know, PR is going to be a fast track to people knowing about you and talking about you. And, you know, marketing, I know this comes into the next topic too, just a segue, but it's not something that happens overnight. So a lot of the marketing work that goes into, you know, launching a brand, launching a new product, it's going to take time. SEO is going to take time. We're very good at it, and we see results quickly, but those types of tactics take time. Right?
Exactly.
PR, you get one good article, and then you know it's paired with good marketing. Yes.
PR really is time bound, though. It really is.
Right.
The timing has to be correct, and you are going to see those results much faster.
Mm-hmm.
This takes us into the next blind spot. Thank you, Matt, for that segue. Unrealistic timelines and the myth of overnight wins. I can't tell you how many people come in and say, I gotta move product right now. Does market even know who you are? So one of the best quotes that I ever heard was by a man named Alan Dibb. And he says, marketing is I just had it in my head. Marketing is a process. Marketing is a process, not an event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. Marketing is a process. And I saw a meme the other day in a marketing thing that said, marketing is saying one thing 100 times, not saying 100 things once. And that's also just great advice. This is going to take time, especially if you don't have money to put into ads. But even if you have money to put into ads, I've said this before, how many times do you see an ad once and take action?
Almost never. I mean, never.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah. Brands have to build up trust. They have to build up familiarity. They have to create desire over time. Mm-hmm. And so that requires some runway. It just does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think when it comes to marketing, it's so crucial to be proactive with it. Proactive with the awareness that you need marketing. We see a lot of people coming to us and having conversations with us that are taking a reactive approach. They need marketing to solve an immediate problem.
A business problem.
That's what I keep thinking about, is that when we see people who are coming into us that don't have marketing problems, they have business problems that marketing can't overcome.
100%.
Right. I mean, like a location, like a bad location. Sorry, I got some PTSD. Yeah,
bad location. That is a business problem. It's not a marketing problem.
It's not a marketing problem. We can do the best marketing in the world. And if your retail location is in a place where nobody ever wants to go, and there are competitors that are nearby in the places where everybody wants to go, then no amount of marketing. I'm not gonna say no amount of marketing. Very challenging to overcome that with marketing.
Yeah, I'll blanket and say it's no amount of marketing. Yeah. I'll do that. But the other thing to think about here too is that there's conditions under which suddenly your product is in demand. And I will go back to COVID for many, many industries, including the cannabis industry. Everybody was in the dispensaries, or at least ordering from the dispensaries during the lockdown. And they tried to shut down dispensaries and liquor stores here, I think, in Denver, and it almost caused riots.
It was like an hour, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, so another industry that I had a client in at that time was the appliance repair industry. We had spent years marketing them. Now everybody has to be in their house and they have to have working appliances, so they don't get the option of procrastinating anymore. And all of that effort that we put in over years really paid off at that moment, because the conditions were right for it to pay off. That's nothing that any of us could have made happen. So you have to, you know, luck favors the prepared, and that didn't happen overnight. It happened over years, but then all of a sudden the faucet got turned on to,
yeah, you know, makes you the Maytag repairman. He's been sitting there for 25 years waiting for the moment that you're ready for him. Yeah.
So when we're talking about nobody goes there, Aaron, that leads to our next marketing blind spot, which is right-size your audience, understand your total addressable market. This is a really important thing for both dispensaries and brands that are sold in those dispensaries, because you have geographic limitations. So if you're a brand, you can only sell in the state for most brands, right? You can do license deals and things like that in other markets, but that's for the big boys by and large. You are restricted by this. I mean, the entire United States is not your audience. So you have to understand, in your state, how popular is this category? How much competition do you have? And what's a realistic outcome? We've seen this before. We've seen it on the B2B level too, because they have, you know, their business needs to stay in business, but that means that there have to be enough buyers out there creating that demand. And if there's not, then, you know, you can want all you want, but if they don't need to spend money, they're not going to spend money. So, I go back to a client that we had that was selling live rosin. And they had a financial goal that was pretty steep. And we did all the numbers. Live rosin, just by itself as its own product, it made up like less than 1% of the total market in Colorado. And that was when you included live rosin gummies. If you just went to live rosin, it was extremely small. And to hit those goals, like it just wasn't in the cards. They were going to have to own 30% of that market overnight to meet their financial goals. So knowing the size of your market is so important to actually having realistic goals and not putting yourself in a financial bind or feeling like a failure and just being disappointed in how things are going. All right.
I agree. I'm like, I got nothing to add to that.
All right. The next one is compete for market share instead of hoping to make new audiences. You are entering a competitive space. You don't exist in a vacuum. People have already picked their preferences. You have to pull them away from their preferences at this point. This is a mature enough market where people already have their winners. And those winners have, go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, people know that weed is out there and that they can get it, especially in the legal states. You know, this kind of goes back to me thinking about the yoga mom and the, you know, like the audiences that the industry has been obsessed with attracting who, like, yeah, maybe they're, or they are, some of them are shopping with you, but is that really where you want to throw all of your energy into marketing to them?
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. An audience who isn't going to come in and buy from you. So your market is where your market is. And again, if the market has already chosen who it's going to go with, you have to extract market share from your competitors, which means you have to acknowledge that you are in a competitive environment and you have to pull people away from those competitors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making sense. Am I making sense?
You are.
Yeah.
Because the idea I think that people walk into this with is that there's just going to be an audience there. Poof. We're making a great product. There's going to be an audience.
That's why I mentioned like the yoga mom thing. It's like, hey, we're going to just make up a net new audience of people who aren't already shopping with us or our competitors instead of just going, hey, like these people also own our audience and they already have them alongside us. We just need to attract more of them.
Right. Yeah. We need to do it better than them so that, give these people a reason to buy it from us now or try this product.
And so there's another piece of thinking that goes along with this blind spot, which is your best competitor has a bankroll for this. They have the resources to outmarket you right now. And they are getting blasting their channel probably as much as they can. I mean, their audience as much as they can. With we are the choice that everybody's choosing. You have to be in that fight. You can't hang out on the side, spend minimal dollars and expect that you're going to just be discovered. We all want to be discovered. I mean, honestly, we do all want to be discovered because it's easier for us. If we don't have to put in effort and somebody says, this is great. Everybody needs to try it. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but that whole Norma Jean thing working at a Dairy Queen and then turning into Marilyn Monroe, that's 70 years old. And we have like a handful of examples of that happening. You have to be prepared to go against your biggest competitor. You have to be prepared to actually be visible in the marketplace against your biggest competitor.
Yeah, you have to want to dominate. That's it.
Yes.
You have to, that needs to be the mentality. And we enjoy, I mean, I will say, I don't feel bad saying this. We enjoy working with folks who come in and want to do that and want to dominate because we want to. We want to do the kind of work that dominates. You know, like I love it when we get, and we have great clients always. And today we do. I mean, like we have some right now. It's like they come in and they want to do it, they want to dominate. And it is amazing because let's go. It means that we're going to be able to do some amazing work.
Right? And I think that's the appetite that you have to have.
Lean into ideas that make us nervous, make us nervous, make the client nervous.
You have to have an appetite for destruction. Yeah, sorry. I had to.
It's a jungle, right, Aaron?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Welcome to the jungle.
We got one more blind spot, marketing blind spot that almost everybody shares. Not everybody, but almost everybody shares. Aaron, you're going to love this. Social media presence rarely translates into cannabis sales.
Oh man, where do we start?
It's complicated.
It's complicated. It's such a nuanced. It is a very complicated, nuanced conversation. I'm not going to say it doesn't or it won't, because for every example of it not, you can find an example of where someone's succeeding. succeeding.
I'm going to challenge that real quick, though. Because what is success? Is it likes? Is it engagement? And does equal dollars? Because that's really what everybody wants as a result of that engagement.
That's the thing. I've said this a lot. Like, you can have 100,000 followers and that looks great. And sure, like if they are engaging, it feeds more growth if they're engaging. If they aren't, then you're almost going the other way because you have 100,000 people that don't care about you and they're not engaging. And so every algorithm goes, well, they don't care. But if none, say they do engage, if none of that 100,000 follower audience ever purchases anything from you ever, then what was the value of any of it? Like, I'd rather have 1,000, a client with 1,000 followers and every one of those 1,000 followers spends money with them than 100,000 followers that never spend a dime. I mean, it's just, I don't know. There's so much vanity in all of it.
we've kind of gone back and forth over the many years on our stance regarding social media. And I think it's always going to be valuable to have a digital presence, to have a heartbeat, to have a soul, to, you know, as people are researching brands, they're going to check them out on social. They're going to check out their website. They're going to do their due diligence and before they make a decision potentially. However, they're not going to follow a brand that's posting ads or promotions or, ads, promotions, trying to sell.
Yeah, nobody wants that. Yeah, they don't want that. They remind me of that. I'm passionate about it. I had this conversation yesterday because it wasn't a wrong question. There was a great client was asking a question about like, what would be an on-brand approach? You know, like what in our current feed is an on-brand style that we should continue to publish? And I was like, wow, this is such a hard question for me to answer because I can't do it concisely. I struggle with that anyway, but especially with something like that.
Concision's like, your middle name.
Yeah, Aaron Concision. No. but the brand message might not and often is not the thing that is going to compel someone to engage with you or follow on social. Like you oftentimes brand is like you throw that shit out the window. You know, it's you have to get attention. That is the game. Right. And your brand and your feed full of promotional graphics, you know, with heavy text overlay, highlighting a pop-up or something down the street next. Like people aren't looking at that. They scroll right past that. You gotta try harder.
I think you have to make the decision then. And you don't always have to make the decision. You might be able to be on brand and then also satisfying this. But
you could.
I think the best question to ask is, do you want to be on brand and do you want to be promoting your products and have absolutely nobody engaging? Or do you want to get high engagement? In which case, you are going to have to put things out there that the algorithm favors. And when we say things that the algorithm favors what your audience favors.
Yes.
You have to satisfy your audience and you have to be there for why they're on Instagram, not why you're on Instagram.
Yeah, 100%. You can't take, it's knowing your persona, who is buying from me, like niching down into that so that you have such a specific idea of who it is and what they want and he need to hear, see, feel everything that you're able to create intentional content that targets those people. It hits them. I mean, we see it all the time. Like every single person with an Instagram feed sees things that make them laugh, cry, want to share. By the way, sharing is more important than ever. Instagram is heavily weighting shares almost over regular engagement now. They want to see that your content is so relatable to people. I'm going to keep using that word because that's a lot of what we see. Like, designer humor. Like, I mean, the three of us are constantly sharing videos with each other on Instagram. And most of the time we're sharing them because they're so relatable to our daily lived experience. That's the kind of content that everyone needs to aspire to create. I mean, truly. And it might not be on brand.
I realize we're far away from the actual blind spot here, which is okay, because the other thing I want to say is stay the hell out of the way of your social media managers. Let them get you attention. Let them do that. Mm-hmm. Stop being so worried about it. You should be worried about it, right? Because it should be uncomfortable. It should be pushing boundaries. That's what's going to get you attention.
Give them level set on your expectations of what, you know, you're not going to see a direct line of sight, you know, to revenue from your social feed. So stop asking what the ROI is on your social media, you know, profiles. It's like, change your expectations, change the purpose behind why you're active on social in the first place.
And have fun with it. Enjoy it. Have fun. I mean, you're this cannabis, like it's social media. It can be ridiculous. It could be sad. It can be all of these emotional, it can have these deeply resonant emotional qualities. You got to try. Have fun. Make it that way. Sorry. I'm just like.
Who is Nutter Butter's core audience that they're targeting, Aaron?
Who knows?
Because I think you just get attention. That's the name of the game. You're in the economy of attention when you're doing social. Matt, what you were saying about that direct line to ROI, that's going to be true for any tactic. It's not going to be one tactic that gets you what you need. Right. It's going to be being in many places, many touch points. All right. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. And the thing I want you to walk away with beyond just these 10 things is that we see this a lot, which means that if you can change the way you look at some of these things, you are going to start being ahead of the competition because you know that they are stuck in these places and you now have the knowledge to get out of them.
Mm-hmm. So, and give your social media manager autonomy is what I say.
Yes. Stay the hell out of the way.
Let them all have fun. Yes.
I think we are back in December possibly, but you know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving here and then we've got the whole holiday season going. So, but I do think that we have one scheduled for December. So plan on seeing you all then. Enjoy your turkey and thanks for joining.
Till next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to Cannabis Business Confidential by Hybrid Marketing Co. Tune in next time for more expert insights into the evolving cannabis industry.